Iconic to Dungeons & Dragons in a way that is shared only with the beholder, the aberrant brain-eating Illithids have been challenging and terrifying players of the game since 1975. Commonly known as Mind Flayers, the Lovecraftian Illithids typically exist as extensions to an even worse, sinister intellect that dwells in the darkness, the Elder Brain. Welcome back to Legends and Lore. I'm Renazuo here with my fellow lorekeeper Tom Sweeney, and today we're talking about the Illithids. And unlike races like the Drow, which have various derivatives across other fantasy games, Mind Flayers are one of a handful of monsters exclusive to Dungeons & Dragons, withheld from the open game license. They're also loathed by Sweeney.
I hate them. They're the worst. I hate them.
Yeah. this episode is a function of the will of the people, because not only does he hate Illithids, but the lore on Illithids, it goes back so far and spans every campaign setting.
Literally they are a cancer. Yeah. On the game of D&D, they appear everywhere.
The research on this one is not taken lightly. The episode might run a little bit longer. It might not. We'll see, depending on how.
Let's hope we're like, oh, they're purple. That's it. Hate them.
They can be purple, they can be gray, they can be blue, they can be kind of pinkish. I've seen a couple ones that are like weird.
I've seen black ones. I've seen like proper like ebony colored ones.
That sounds kind of bad. That
stupid mucusy gloss. Oh, hate them.
when I was in high school, or not junior high, we dissected squid in science class.
Same.
And I cannot, once you've handled those things, you have such a better idea of what it is that people are talking about when they say that, or when the book says, oh, the Illithid has rubbery flesh. Blah.
it just makes me queasy thinking about them. I couldn't be okay in a world knowing Illithids are real. I just have to say it. I couldn't sleep in a universe knowing they were real. It would just bother me so much.
If I lived in any of the D&D worlds, because like by D&D lore, apparently they're super common, like throughout everywhere.
They exist in every. So relative, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure you never really hear about Lithids and Ravenloft, even though I might be an Illithid that is a king of a dread domain. That might be it, but I'm pretty sure Lithids are everywhere. They're in Eberron, they're in Greyhawk, they're in Dragonlance. They're not in Dark Sun, because no one wants anything. There's nothing in Dark Sun to take, you know, but.
Yeah, there's two things that Dark Sun and Ravenloft have in common, which might be why we're not sure if they exist in either one, is that Illithid's form of travel is typically through
Spelljammer, right?
Yeah, through Spelljammers, through the Phlogiston between the crystal spheres. Mm-hmm. Ravenloft is not a crystal sphere, and the mm-hmm. one that Dark Sun is in is inaccessible.
Was it accessible? So, oh.
Yeah, like you can't get to it. Apparently, if I'm not mistaken, I would have to do research on this one to say for sure. So if someone knows otherwise, like in the comments, let me know. I think the door that goes to Dark Sun in the City of Doors in Sigil, I mm-hmm. think the door that goes to Dark Sun is even broken. I think all forms of travel to and from Dark Sun are completely sealed off.
You can't go there. Keep Dark Sun where it is. Keep that setting away from. We're gonna do an episode on Dark Sun eventually, and if you guys want depressing, that is the most depressing D&D setting ever. Like, imagine Mad Max, but like remove all the charm and add Dungeons and Dragons and people that defile the planet to get magic. It is super not cool.
It's a cool setting, but it's also very gritty and dark. It's got a super like the last time I played it, it had a very Conan the Barbarian mm-hmm. kind of low magic sword and sorcery kind of feel to it, as opposed to the high fantasy of D&D, of like Forgotten Realms and stuff.
It is.
But Illithids can be found just about everywhere else. They're on the taller side. They got a head of an octopus, four tentacles instead of the eight that hang off of their face. There's no beak under there. Instead, they've got this round maw that's like a lamprey with a ring of teeth that just kind of gnashes. As we said, the flesh is soft and rubbery. If they're well fed, that's when they get that slimy mucus that Sweeney likes, that is just all over their skin, that just holds in their moisture or whatever it's supposed to do.
It actually helps with their psionic abilities too. a well-fed Illithid, actually, the more slime it produces, the better it is able to use its psionic abilities. And yes, mm-hmm. they are chocked full of psionic abilities, mm-hmm. which makes them even cooler.
Yeah, it's their primary offensive capability, because even though they're illustrated with like these clawed hands, their claws are actually like blunt and kind of soft. They're not good as weapons, not even probably like fingernails. They're just not very good for that. So all of their stuff is in their mind. The psionic abilities that they have depend from edition to edition, but I think in fifth edition they've got a pretty good spread of abilities at this point, mm-hmm. don't they?
If I'm not mistaken, unanimously amongst Mind Flayers, they have their most famous ability, Mind Blast. Mm-hmm. That is their bread and butter. It's usually a save. They roll. If you fail, you take psychic damage and you are stunned. While you are stunned, they walk up to you and then they use their second most famous ability, that brain bite. They open up that disgusting maw and they just try to chomp out your brain. And if they kill you with that ability, you're gone. No resurrection, no nothing. They're eating your brain, taking your knowledge, and your character is vanished. You just that's
wipe
it.
Your you ass got, with your character sheet. It's gone.
You gotta get wish spelled back.
They've, in addition to that, they, they'll use their psionics to enthrall weaker minds, get themselves some slaves. They've got telepathy to communicate with. And then if they've really kind of taken time to hone the abilities, they can get like a whole like plethora of additional psionic abilities.
Yeah. So there are stories of, within the Mind Flayer Society, you're not supposed to be using magic. Magic is like banned. It's forbidden.
Yeah.
What happens is, since Mind Flayers are so intelligent, they are amazing wizards. Like, it is insane. When a Mind Flayer peeks into, like, let me just go into the more arcane side of stuff, they get excommunicated from their group. Obviously, they get kicked out of Elder Brain or killed. Yeah. But if they live, they become very formidable fucking like casters, to the point that they're like, they can combat a high level campaign with one Mind Flayer. And they also are not, it's not unheard of for a Mind Flayer to become a lich as well.
Yeah. I've seen them called different things. They have the Illithilich and the Alhoon.
Mm-hmm. Alhoon.
I think the Alhoon is supposed to be like an imperfect Illithilich, mm-hmm. like it's a, because they have inherent spell resistance. So if they try to become liches, their own spell resistance can kind of mess up the process, and then they become an Alhoon. But Alhoons are messed up too. Like they will mess you up. Most Illithids view magic as a inferior version of psionics, like a bastardized, watered down version of true power, which is psionics. So that's why they shun it. But some of the Illithids who dip into the arcane, they get results, man.
they are proficient at hurting people. They are really, really good. They come with a bunch of other abilities, but since Mind Flayers are usually, and with whatever canon they're in, they usually reside within the Underdark, with the drows and very other kinds of, dark dwelling races. So they tend to have poor hearing, photosensitive eyes that are better for the dark. They also have infrared vision. Mm-hmm. And various other abilities that are meant for not really being in the sun. In 5th edition, I know that's no longer a problem. You have to worry about a mind flayer in the middle of the day coming to kill you. But they are just very out
to
capable.
Lunch and he walks up to you like, oh, that's a big brain you got there.
And you're just like, what? And then you're eating. That's it.
Yeah.
They are very, very annoying.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like their sense of sound was like they can tell what direction something is coming from pretty easily enough, but they're very bad at distinguishing different sounds from one another. So if you've got like a lot of sounds that like blend together, music doesn't really do it for them. They're just like, that's noise. Like
I know in relative to 4E and 5E, they have true sight. In 4E, I think they had dark vision, I'm sure. Mm. But in 5E, they also have dark vision as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's the Alithalish that has the true sight. Those ones you're not getting away from. You are just in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, they're friggin' wild. I remember in 2nd edition when we had the infrared and stuff like that. That was why they were photosensitive, was because they see supposedly, I think it's like 2 additional colors past red, like, which would be infrared. And I'm not sure what's after infrared. I can't remember the scale, but they see all that stuff. So when you're on the surface, there's a lot more of it and it's just too much for them to take in. It used to reduce their sight down to about 15 feet, period.
Oh, wow.
And, so using light spells on them and stuff like that was a good way to try and like if you knew you were going to fight an Illithid, usually you don't know what's coming. But if you knew you were going to go fight one, you could be like, all right, well, let's pack some extra stuff to try and like blind this motherfucker. And sometimes it works.
Bring that back, 5E. Bring that back. Return all that. We want all of that blinding Illithid energy back. Blind them, maim them, beat them, torch them, bring it all back. I hate them.
Drag them through the streets.
I would have no problem as a D&D person, a D&D liver in that world. I would have no problem killing an Illithid and putting it as a scarecrow in front of my house. I have no problem. They are the worst. If you guys are going to see... Once you guys play against them, you'll understand. Why my hatred and my loathsome feelings for Illithid comes from a campaign I played with a friend, a very experienced dungeon master, very well understanding of how Illithid works. And we fought them alongside their best pets, Intellect Devourers, and we lost 3 people in the camp in that encounter. Cool. We had just entered their hive. We didn't even like get halfway through. We just entered. We fought like two of the like the weird Yeti things. Then we fought like 1 Mind Flayer and 2 Intellect Devourers. And it killed the Ranger and the Barbarian. We're gone. They were just no longer involved.
So the last campaign where I fought one, it was a 5th edition game. And basically we walked into this area, right? And it wasn't a good place for us to be. We were in like a choke point, and it was like 3 Illithids that popped up, and we were screwed. You know what I mean? And so I knew immediately we can't stand in that choke because that's mind blast territory right there, you know, because they can do it in a cone. Mm-hmm. I come out of the choke. A bunch of my party members, you know, I don't really know these people very well. They stayed in the choke and they all got mind blasted. So you're looking at stun, stun, stun. And that's just, you can't do anything. You're screwed.
And then they just lightly sidle up to you and start biting your brain.
The only way we could keep them from getting devoured was I was playing a pyromancer. So I was able to cook up a wall of fire that was able to keep them from closing that distance immediately to allow people to start making additional saves and stuff like that. Because if you, you know, buy people time, sometimes they can actually make that save. But it was an intense fight.
They are really, really, really high level. Let's get into the origin of these wonderful, these... let's get into the origin of Lithids.
I think for this time, instead of jumping right into the origin, we'll discuss their society, because the origin of these things is interesting in that we don't know exactly what the origin is. It's not like other races where it's like, oh, you know, the drow came from elves and this is the thing that happened, or it's just different in different campaign settings. And we'll kind of like get into that. I want to save that because that's going to be our theory segment, because we're going to be able to go off on that for like a while. Normally we would do origins and then discuss their society, but their society is homogenous across almost every campaign setting.
Mm-hmm. There's usually no gender or sex between a Lithid. Mm-hmm. You're just a Lithid. That's it.
Yeah. And they view themselves basically as top of the food chain. We run this shit. We're destined to take over everything. Our empire will rise, and everyone else is their food, their labor, or their vessels for new mind flares. They're egg laying places.
They're tadpole holders, pretty much. They are the mind flare are a race that they usually have no sense of gratitude for lower races. They view themselves as the tippity top of the food chain. They actually tend to work with drow. If anyone they work with, they usually work with drow. With them both commandeering the Underdark. They come from societies that are led by one main overlord, the Elder Brain, which is the central computer, pretty much, that sends all the messages and information out to every single Elder Brain, Mind Flayer, Intellect Devourer in the general area to pretty much keep the things moving relatively smoothly.
Yeah, and the cool thing about the Elder Brain, and I think it's kind of cool, is that I think calling them a central computer is pretty accurate, because Lithids don't keep their history and their knowledge in a written form. They have a written language, but it's imbued with like this psionic energy that only Lithids can read. But that's not how they record their history and their knowledge. It's in the Elder Brain. When a mind flare dies, eventually, you know, when it dies, the brain is turned over to the Elder Brain, which is a big mass of brain tissue with a, I don't know, like a maw or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the Elder Brain eats all of the brains of the Illithids that pass and absorbs all of the accumulated knowledge that that individual had. So if the individuals are running around eating the brains of other sentient species and maintaining their knowledge, and then they give up their brains to the Elder Brain and it holds it, it's a fuckload of information, a metric fuckton of information housed within one Elder Brain. But the drawback is if the Elder Brain dies, then that knowledge is all lost, because they don't have backups. They didn't write it down. You don't back up an Elder Brain to another Elder Brain. it's just gone.
The cool thing, though, I'll give one cool thing. All right. In the game Baldur's Gate, I'm pretty sure in 3 as well. I know it's in 3. I don't remember 1 and 2 that much. But there is a Mind Flayer who actually leaves the... They have a hive mind consciousness for the most part. They are all connected to the will of the Elder Brain. But there's accounts of actually Mind Flayers being removed from the Elder Brain and being separate. And sometimes when they are removed from the Elder Brain's web of connection, they actually become like heroically good people. which is disgusting for me to say. I almost threw up saying it. But they become not bad.
Yeah, their whole society is really jacked up because like the whole thing from top to bottom. So even though they're evil pieces of shit, you know, obviously because of the whole slavery and eating brains thing, they rely on those slaves, on their thralls for company, because Illithids will go insane from loneliness if they're left alone for too long. Mm-hmm. And it's not even that long that it takes. They'll start going crazy after like a few months, a year, and they'll just start going batty. So every Illithid tends to have to walk around with at least one thrall on hand. But the ones that are like the healthiest tend to have a bunch of them. And their thralls, they try not to eat prized thralls. But it's like, it's not like a recognition of a quality. It's like you not eating your own cat.
Yeah.
You know, if you were out in the wild you were starving and there was just a dog or a cat out there, you might just eat a random dog or cat. But if it's your dog or cat, you'd probably do everything you could to not eat that dog or cat. It's kind of that sort of relationship, which is fucked up. And they have this sort of odd sense of gratitude towards those thralls, but at the same time they consider every race should be grateful to them for deeming their brains good enough to be eaten.
Yeah, you know, they believe like, that is a blessing that you should respect, and that is the beginning of one of the reasons why I hate them. They are known throughout. So Illithids, unlike other races who are native relatively to the worlds, Illithids are more or less a D&D spacefaring species, which you would say. You'd agree with that, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're spacefaring. So they are not from, let's say, like the Shifter race is from Eberron. That's where they're native to. But the Illithids are native to the wild, wild reaches of space, being Illithids, mm-hmm. being vibrations. They're from, like, they're assumed to be, not even exactly, they're a native to the farthest reaches where the gods aren't, and there is just chaos and madness and pandemonium over there. And out of that pops the Illithids in idea. Mm-hmm. And they actually have a very rich history with another, would you say, race or two races?
You're talking about the Gith are originally kind of like their own
thing. They're one race, right? Would you say the Gith is one race, and is there two sub-races between them?
Yeah, I think when they were originally enslaved, I think the Gith were just one race, and I think they split after they rebelled.
Yeah. After they rebelled with Lord Gith.
Yeah. And they were the big slave race for the Illithids at that time. This is, you know, so the Illithids have this crazy star-spanning empire. They have these, you know, they're traveling through the inner planes, outer planes, and then they have the Gith that are their slave race. And when the Gith basically rose up and rebelled, that was like the apocalypse for the Illithids.
Everything went completely wrong.
Yeah.
Like most slavers that tend to do stuff, they fail to realize how much they are outnumbered with which they enslave. They
fucked around and found out.
They literally, they did. They stepped in their own shit, because the Gith are another race that, since all their time with the Mind Flayers, they developed them. Now, Gith are said to have several origins. People believe that they are actually a group of wild space elves. Some people believe that that might be what they are, but they were the ones who rebelled from the Gith, and then they went on a war path,
hunting them down, annihilating them, destroying their ships. So a lot of the times now, even though they came from space, a lot of Illithids have absolutely no idea how to travel space now. They don't know how to, because once that elder brain is destroyed, knowledge of how to do it is lost. They have to go and figure it out all over again. So a huge chunk of their society is centered around just the massive accumulation of knowledge in the hopes that they can get back to where they were, you know, or not necessarily in location, but in terms of power, you know.
And they are having trouble with it. They the Illithids, though they may not be exactly the weakest, they are completely just a shadow of what they once were. They were the head honchos of the universe they came from. Mm-hmm. They were like number one on the totem pole. They were like us on Earth right now. Like, just, they're the kings. They're sitting on the throne. But that rebellion led to a lot of mishaps and destruction. And now it is known for Geth to travel the Phlogiston just looking for mind flayers to slaughter.
Yeah. And I mean, it would be like, the, you know, if we're using the dog and cat analogy earlier, if all of our dogs and cats just stood up tomorrow, started talking, took up arms, and attacked us.
It'd be really wild. Not good news. It'd be like, whoa, this is horrible. This is the worst thing ever. But yeah, that's what happened between them and the Geth.
As a whole, this sort of overthrow, it preoccupies a huge chunk of their society, because Illithids don't pursue things for individual gratification. They're every single member that is linked in with an elder brain. We're not talking about the guys who are kind of like on the outside being wizards or whatever. Anyone who's in with the communities within the colonies and stuff that have an elder brain, they're all, you know, working to build that knowledge base and further the species. They'll compete with each other, but they still have a sense of kind of like a single identity almost. And they don't pursue things for their own gratification. Almost, their emotional experience is almost entirely negative. Everything they do is informed by this preoccupation of resentment, envy, not even necessarily greed, but a little bit kind of like greed because of the accumulation of knowledge, just all of that terrible stuff. Even when they are trying to accomplish a specific goal or a benchmark, they don't experience happiness from that. It means nothing to them. The closest that they get is when they devour a brain and they experience this crazy rush of euphoria that's almost like orgasmic to them. And some of them will sit there, if they can, if they have a ready source, they'll just eat and eat and eat and eat, because they only experience those positive things in that moment. And the smarter someone is, the more creative they are, the more intellectually gifted or unique a person is, the better the flavor and the better experience is for them. But they can't create those experiences for themselves. They have to borrow them from other people.
Yeah, so they suck. Overall, Lithids, worst thing ever. You should want them all dead. You should attack them with extreme prejudice when you encounter them in a game.
Yeah, they're and even if you negotiate, even if you try to negotiate, you got to keep in mind that the way that Illithid is going to betray you was decided before he decided to negotiate with you. Like, before he struck the deal, he already knew how he was going to slip the knife in your back.
They also, another thing to note is that them being alien, their mentalities, the way they're not on the same playing field as other humanoids. Mm-hmm. They don't think like we do. They don't think like, they don't have the emotional span that we do. So yeah, moment you encounter one, it is like, that is a meal. Mm-hmm. That is a meal that's just capable of talking to me.
and primitive speech is not particularly impressive to them either. So,
since they use telepathy to speak, they are entirely a very alien race to just the world as a whole. Now, don't get me wrong, they are fantastic adversaries in the game. Like, I'd argue some of the best. I think they're, I would put them as probably the number one, I would say, personally. Like, dealing with the Illithids and other aberrations, I'd put that as number one. As just, like, simply the best adversaries in D&D. I hate them.
Not only because they're so monstrous, but because it's so clean cut, you know? And a lot of... A lot of Dungeons and Dragons used to be that way, but the more we get into nuances of storytelling that they just weren't doing, you know, back in first or second edition, once you get into sort of the nuances of storytelling, less of the monsters and races of D&D are inherently evil. We discussed that in the Drow episode, but Illithids and other aberrations,
they're not good.
They're just evil. You know, in almost every instance, they're so alien. Their motives are so unknowable. Their sense of morality is so, like, off its axis that
it doesn't make sense.
But they don't see themselves that way either. And that's kind of like telling, because they don't have a concept of those things of, like, good and evil, because they see themselves as agents of order in a chaotic universe, you know, and only they can instill that order. Every other species to them is just wandering through life aimlessly without a real purpose. Only Illithids have purpose, and that's to put everything in its place and organize everything and accumulate all the knowledge and dominate everybody
and just eat all the brains available. Just eat them all. I just hate complimenting them. I hate it. I dislike it so much, but they are fantastic adversaries. And what makes them even better is that they are genuinely, genuinely extremely smart. Mm-hmm. Like a dumb mind flayer, like on average, let me look up the mind flayer's player stats real quick for a second. So the average person in D&D has the intelligence of about 10. That is standard baseline. Person's intelligence. A mind flayer's intelligence, I would assume, is at least 15-16. I could be wrong. No, a base mind flayer's intelligence is 19
base level. So that means that the ones that wander off and start learning magic and stuff, they can be even smarter. The ones that are their own psionic entities that have really doubled down on learning, even worse. What's the one? It's called the I can't say a lot of this stuff. Illithrids are like alpha Illithids, and you'll rarely get one where an Illithrid is born. It has two extra tentacles, and it's not controlled by the elder brain. It's completely independent, and the elder brain lets it stay. Because an Illithrid will basically is responsible for, like, brief fits and starts of population growth. Mm-hmm. So he'll get together, like, some of his buddies. He'll get together, like, some of the Illithids he likes, some thralls and stuff. And eventually he'll leave, and he'll go far away from where the elder brain is. He'll settle, do his thing, set up a power base, and then I don't know what the mechanic is, but he eventually becomes his own elder brain. Probably after eating his friends or whatever.
That sounds like Illithids to me.
But otherwise, they only reproduce once or twice in their entire lives. I'm not sure how long they live. I want to say it's a long time, but I don't remember. Actually,
I feel like everything outlives humans relatively in the world of Dungeons and Dragons, except for orcs and goblins.
Yeah. A lot of the goblinoid ones, the Kenku, I think, don't live for very long.
Oh, the average lifespan of Illithid is 125 years old.
That's better than a human, but not so much that it's like, you know.
That's not elf and dwarf territory where it's like centuries.
Yeah, but because they pass on their knowledge to the elder brain, it's like, are you really getting rid of the Illithid when it dies? Really?
Yeah. So cool.
So. And it's weird because this whole like passing on of knowledge and consuming and all that other stuff, that's their form of immortality. That mm-hmm. So for humans in D&D, they die, they go on to an afterlife. They're based off their alignment or whatever god they worshipped. Worshipping deities is not common with Illithids because for them, they're familiar with the outer planes. Worshipping entities that come from the outer planes is usually silly to them. And when they die, they're like, no, we don't go to an outer plane. We rejoin our own by going into the Elder Brain, you know, mm-hmm. and then we're preserved forever, assuming, you know, someone doesn't come along and squish the Elder Brain. So it's weird. Their whole life cycle is weird because they only breed once or twice in their entire life. They do the tadpole thing.
Yes, we didn't get into the wonderful way that mind flayers reproduce, a little process called seramorphosis. Which would you like to do the honors of explaining this beautiful creation of life?
So, yeah, so they basically, they lay little jelly-like eggs that spawn little tadpole-looking things. And the tadpoles get dropped into the tank. It's a briny tank where the Elder Brain is. And they're kept there for 10 years. During that 10 years, the Elder Brain can eat them as a snack, or they can eat each other. Anything that's left after that 10-year period is plucked out and placed into another humanoid, and the tadpole burrows into its head, eats the brain, absorbs all the knowledge, and then changes the body into a new mind flayer. And that's where you get new mind flayers. They don't have male or female anything. They just bleh, I'm a hermaphrodite, I spit out eggs, tadpoles, and then it goes into a person. And I mean, a lot of the variants for Illithids come from Illithids experimenting with tadpoles and putting them into non-humanoid creatures to mm-hmm. see what happens.
And there are here are some doozies. So what happens is Illithids, when it comes to elves, humans, orcs, and I think that those are the main ones, those mm-hmm. races become standard mind flayers. Mm-hmm. But if you put a mind flayer inside of a gnome, it becomes a little seramorph gnome. It's a tiny little mind flayer. They're kind of adorable in a very disgusting, you're an abomination way. The same thing happens when they're placing the bodies of
he looks like a chibi. Like a chibi Illithid.
They look silly. They look so
with his little gross. Ray gun. That's funny.
There are also variations when they're put inside the bodies of, I think, dwarves also. Dwarves become standard mind flayers as well. But when they're put inside the body of lizard folks, they become this disgusting lizard folk with tentacles and a maw. And it is just woefully unsettling to look at.
What I don't even know how to pronounce that one.
It is
Zagandi.
Really, it's Zagandis.
Zagandi.
Yes. Yeah. They're also known.
Messed up.
They look so disgusting.
Yeah, they're basically green Illithids with scales and a tail. They got kind of like a more Cthulhu way about them, actually.
They do.
Like,
they look more so standard Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
Now there's also ideas of people putting tadpoles with and vampires. That is a thing. That is not a lie. Illithids would capture vampires. And if anyone knows anything about vampires in the world of Forgotten Realm, that's not easy. It's not easy to take down a vampire.
And then put one into a vampire, yeah.
And they become vampire mind flayers. And they
I remember in one edition, I don't remember which one it was. The explanation was they'd put the tadpole into someone that they knew was going to get turned, you know?
Mm.
So the transformation would start, and then the vampire would turn a person, and the transformation would complete after the vampirism. But I don't remember which one of that is. But Either way, vampire ones are fucked up.
Then they also have versions of them where they are put inside of golems. So to put a mind flare inside the body of a little tadpole inside the body of a flesh golem, it turns into a golem version of Enlithid, which is just a nightmare.
Is that the brain golem, or is that?
Yes, it's the brain golem. Just a nightmare. It's a walking nightmare.
My favorite Ceramorph variation is the Mind Witness.
The Mind Witness
is the one that they put into Beholders, and that one is crazy. Like, because it's like you think immediately, like, oh, this is going to be so powerful, you know. But it's not powerful in the way that you think. Like, it obviously, when you fight it, it has Beholder abilities, it has Illithid abilities, but it's more like a lot of things when you combine them, they're greater than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
The
this is mind, definitely lesser.
Yeah, the Mind Witness is lesser or just equal to the sum of its parts because of the fact that Illithids abuse and subjugate Mind Witnesses so much, like right at their inception, right at creation, that they teach them to be completely obedient and the Elder Brain just completely suppresses them. The main mm-hmm. function of a Mind Witness is to function as a networking node for mm-hmm. psionics. So normally telepathy in D&D is you have like mass telepathy, but normal telepathy is like a one-to-one connection. The Mind Witness has a unique ability where it can maintain 7 unique connections at one time. So within a colony, you set up a few Mind Witnesses and suddenly the amount of information that travels between Illithids is crazy. And if Illithids go to war or they have a ship or anything like that, put a couple Mind Witnesses on there and every member of that ship or every member of that battalion or whatever, they are all on the same page constantly because those telepathic commands are moving so quickly between so many of them in one instant.
It is mind blowing that how well they are able to use the Mind Witness. But my favorite one is the one that I've never fought, but in theory, it just sounds like the worst possible time ever. But for me, the best one would have to be the Mind Flayer Dragon combination, because that one is just, it just sounds so horrible. I think it's called the Brain Feeder Dragon.
The brain stealer, yes.
I just saw
Brain Stealer and I was like, oh, that doesn't sound interesting, and I didn't see the dragon part on it. It is a wild
Lithid and a dragon combined. So imagine the fear that a dragon is able to conjure up and hold. Now imagine that being way more intelligent than what a dragon is naturally, even though dragons are kind of the top of the food chain in the world of D&D as a race, at least.
Jeez.
And now add that all that mind flare glitches intelligence. They are horrifying. They are horrifying to deal with.
That's wild, man. They look pretty gross too.
They look so Lovecraftian. It looks like Cthulhu, actually.
Yeah.
They look very Cthulhu-esque, and they are hilariously tough to deal with.
Hilariously tough. Oh,
it man. Is bad. They have to believe they have multiple attacks. They have a mind blast instead of their breath weapon, but it's amped up to crazy degrees because it's a dragon.
Yeah.
So they can like mind blast the whole team, and then they can grapple with their tentacles. They're gigantic. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
So Pathfinder does not have Illithids. I think I mentioned this earlier, that like the Beholder, this is a proprietary thing to D&D. They did not let Beholders, Illithids, I think Displacer Beasts and a couple others, they didn't let that go in the open license. It's considered part of their, like, identity, so they kept it. But because I run mostly Pathfinder games in recent years, I converted the Mind Flayer over to Pathfinder. My wife despises Mind Flayers.
She's like, a smart woman. She's a very smart lady.
She cannot stand them. And the reason she can't stand them is I run them very similarly to how they were handled in second edition, which in second edition, a lot of creatures, dragons included, would have a specific section in their entry that would be basically their retreat cost, the thing that would cause them to pull out of a fight. And in second edition, you didn't get full experience if something pulled out of a fight. So the Illithids do not have a high retreat cost. The higher it is, that's the percentage. So if one has an 80% retreat cost or something, it would be like, oh, it has to have taken 80% of its damage. And then it'll... Illithids don't have a high one. Red dragons don't either, but Illithids don't have a high one. And so Illithids will be frustrating because they come in, fuck up the whole team, sling out their psionics, maybe munch a brain. And as soon as the tide turns against them, they're like, nope, deuces, and they're out. Because to them, no amount of setbacks on their plans is worth them dying, especially if it's away from like the elder brain or around these primitive races that might destroy their brain before it can get back to the elder brain, that sort of thing.
They are extraordinarily crafty, and I cannot exemplify enough, okay? So a regular person's intelligence is 10. A commoner's intelligence is 10 at level, at period. You know, they don't escape that. The average, a run-of-the-mill, a standard run-of-the-mill Mind Flayer's intelligence is 19. Mm-hmm. That means they are way, way smarter than people are. And that is what makes them such good villains. Because they're the villains, because a Mind Flayer is smart enough that they could think of something so macro and keep tricking you and tricking you to the point you have no clue where to start. They also
entire campaign villains, really.
Yeah, they are. And then their Mind Flayers have been known to broker deals with other like fiends, which are like when you're getting into like really just like not good stuff. They're known to broker deals with them because the Mind Flayers are so smart, and other ones are like, we don't really want to have a whole problem with them right now. So if you ever use them in campaign, remember to exemplify like the double cross and all that stuff. They justify being that smart.
Everyone that I've run so far always has some sort of plane shift or teleport in its back always. Pocket. And that's why she hates them, is that if she comes in hard and she throws everything she's got at that Illithid, there's a very good chance she's still not going to beat it because it'll just leave.
Yeah, like, I'm going to get out of here now.
It doesn't fight to the death. It'll just leave. And the only time I could conceive of Illithids hanging out and fighting to the death is if an elder brain was
commands at stake. Them. Yeah.
Yeah.
They are really, really, really powerful psionically. There's also a lot of deep lore. When it comes to the Illithid, they are actually not exactly sure whether if they are a race from the future, the far distant future, or the great past, because of how everything happened to them. They are believed to be jettisoned through time, right? Coming back to more of a modern era because of how badly things were going after the rebellion with the Gith.
So we've got a few different theories, and this is getting into the origins. This is where we're going to go a little off of, off book here in terms of like specifically what is said. Like, we'll give you what is said, and then we're going to kind of spin off of it, because you have a few different origins that have been presented on the Illithids over the years. Remember, they came out in 1975. Gygax wrote them himself. But since then, we're up to the fifth edition. It's been a few years. It's been a minute. So they're considered to be older than just about every other race. They're usually considered to be prehistoric in nature. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the reasons why they're considered to maybe be from the future is because aboliths don't remember them. Abelis are another aberration, and they have genetic memory. So every Abelith that spawns another Abelith has all of the memories of every Abelith that came before it in its line. And Aboliths are supposed to be old as fuck, like older than dirt. Like they're beginning of the universe kind of species.
Aboliths are technically older than the gods that made the races that exist. They are very old.
Aboliths don't remember them from before. They remember them now, like, oh yeah, they showed up one day, but they don't remember them from before that. And if no Abelith remembers where you came from, that's kind of telling, you know?
That's saying a lot.
So another one is that they're from the Far Realm, which is the one you were referring to earlier, which is the cosmology of D&D is you have the material plane. Wrapped around that is the ethereal and elemental planes. Wrapped around that, you've got the astral plane. Within the astral plane, you've got the outer planes. And then outside of all of that is just outside of existence. And that's the far plane. That's one of the possible places that they could come from.
Yeah, it's potentially outside of... So it's so weird to think about it. But what happens is D&D's worlds... are like, imagine a constellation, right? This world connects to that world based on various things, and lots of worlds shared similar places. Like, I know that Greyhawk, I think Eberron, and Forgotten Realms, they all share Avernus as a place where they all exist. So there are kind of worlds stacked on top of each other and then beside each other and then all this stuff. And that makes up relatively... the expanse of the material planes throughout the universe.
Yeah.
Or the multiverse.
For the next origin idea, you have to kind of understand how this is laid out. So imagine all of reality stacked in a pillar or in that sphere that I gave before. But within the material plane, you have basically the universe, but not quite. Because in D&D, every star system... adheres to sort of old style understanding of the universe, like from before, you know, back in medieval times and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, and those are basically a star system is a crystal sphere. A sun is distinct from a star, and a sun is what we think of as the sun. But the things you see in the sky that are stars are not distant suns. There's shit that's on the inside of the crystal sphere, because how it would work for us in our in the solar system, you would travel out past Pluto, and then after you got to 2 times the distance of Pluto's orbit, you would run smack into a physical object
that stops you from leaving. A literal wall that you can't leave through unless someone opens a portal or somehow a portal opens up. Either a god is like, hey, welcome inside or get on out of here.
Or okay, we'll kick you out.
Some sort of magic, which is really hard to use outside of off planets, and get inside. It's literally a physical wall of existence preventing travel relatively between, because god is like, no, this is our playground. Yeah, you guys stay over there.
Place. You're here for us. And if you can get through that wall, you then are cast into a massive semi-liquid, semi-gas medium called the phlogiston.
Mm-hmm.
And within the phlogiston, other crystal spheres float. That's where they are. That's how you get to these other star systems as we would consider them. So to get to Andromeda, you would have to leave the solar crystal sphere, break out of the barrier, travel through this phlogiston, and then break through another barrier to get into the Andromeda space of that crystal sphere. And that's how they refer to them. So Greyhawk, Dragonlance, and Forgotten Realms exist in a triad. Mm-hmm. Of crystal spheres that are very close to one another. But the phlogiston, because it's a liquid gas thing that's also very flammable, has a flow to it. It moves in a certain direction. And we're kind of going down a rabbit hole, but it's important. This shit's important. You got to know it so that you know what the hell we're talking about. So they exist in this triad. To go from each one of them has their own name. You got Gray Space, Kryn Space, and Realm Space. And because of how it flows, Realm Space and Gray Space, which is Greyhawk and Forgotten Realms, you can get to them from each other. You cannot get to Dragonlance from Forgotten Realms, but Dragonlance can go to Forgotten Realms. So it's a one-way trip. And then Dragonlance can't go to Greyhawk, but Greyhawk can go to Dragonlance. Another one-way trip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if you wanted to get to Dragonlance from Forgotten Realms, you would have to break out of the Crystal Sphere, get into the Gray Space Crystal Sphere, break through that one, back out into the Phlogiston, and then get to Dragonlance, Kryn Space, that way. Now, all that being said, those are relatively close together. You go way out into fucking bumfuck nowhere on a cosmological scale, and you get to Cluster Space, or otherwise called the Astromundi Cluster. And the final theory is that Illithids are from that crystal sphere, that far away, and they're either cursed humans or mutated humans or something, but they came from there. There's a module in old D&D where you could, like, I can't remember if it was a module. I think it was actually an article in Dragon or Dungeon magazine. And it was basically done from, like, the point of view of, like, these people who were observing this planet. Supposedly the planet that they would have come from, if this is the theory you go with, is completely barren of sentient life. Nothing there. There's nothing there at all. And so that would explain why they had to leave. But the fact that they made that trip
is unbelievable. It's just insane.
Now, which one of the theories do you like?
I don't know. I don't know where to start. There's so many that could be. It's like these sound pretty good.
Now, one of the reasons why Illithids are so wild in terms of this is that the Mind Flayer timeline is not like a human timeline. Humans, elves, dwarves, in all of the different campaign settings of D&D they have different histories. We discussed that in the Drow episode, actually. Drow are totally different depending on where you go. Illithids are the same because of that cosmological explanation that I just gave you. They came from a single place that sits outside of where all of the other D&D settings are from. So for them, their timeline is coming in from outside of all these campaign settings, and then they split off and proliferate across all those crystal spheres, but have knowledge of them. They can travel between them. They can do all these things. So their history for them includes all of the other histories, but for them is linear. You know, they understand the other campaign settings almost the way that the reader does. In the sense that they know these are separate worlds that have separate rules and separate everything. But to them, it's just a matter of eating enough to be able to master it all.
It's so mind-blowing. That is why. These are the reasons why I can't stand them. And then if you play the Eberron settings with all of the other sort of Delquar and other aberrations, there are pretty much super Mind Flayer people. That are just, it's just, it never ends with them.
Yeah.
There's always something else.
And at one point in this, so it's weird to think of their timeline, because their timeline is like that, where they span. Now they refer to their timeline, to their history as ancient history. But if you were to use the future thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
To them, by their reckoning of time, their timeline, that's their past, but it's our future.
Yes.
That they came back from. So for them, it's ancient. But for us, it's not. Now, one of the things that I've seen, which I kind of like, I don't know if I would use it. I do think it's cool, though, is that because they see themselves as agents of order against chaos and entropy and all this other shit, one of the things I saw was that at the end of time, the Illithid Empire is at its height or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they start seeing like the heat death of the universe. Everything is dying. Chaos is winning. And they get it in their head that if they just got a head start on their great work, they would have been able to pull it off. So they all get together, jump in a fucking time travel machine, and just jump back several thousand years, millennia or whatever, and are like, okay, we'll set up here and we'll get started earlier so that by the time the end of the universe rolls around, we'll be ready for it and we can stop it.
That's not the worst idea.
It's so fucked to think like, oh, they're the worst, they're evil, and they're terrible, but they're trying to stop the end of the universe.
They are trying to they're not trying to stop the universe for anybody, though. They're trying to preserve themselves in a grand scheme of things.
Oh, yeah.
Which is horrible, but you gotta admit, you gotta respect the hustle a little bit, you know? You gotta respect it where respect is due. And it's like, man, yeah. Y'all, you guys are out there doing your work.
Yeah, I think each origin story offers something a little different, you know, because one of them is pretty mind-bendy. The Far Realm is kind of mind-bendy, but it's very straightforward Lovecraftian. Oh, they come from somewhere else, you know, and mm-hmm. you don't have to answer specific questions about it. It's just like, yeah, they're fucked up things from somewhere else. But the every theory that's presented has something that conflicts with it. So if you go with the Far Realm theory, for instance, there's a group of Illithids, I think, in Faerun or some, you know, the Underdark, whatever, who made a pilgrimage to the Far Realm. And then when they came back, they were even more fucked up than they are now. So they came back, they had suddenly found Jesus, as it were. Like, they were suddenly very religious. They were a cult. They broke away from the rest of Illithid society, and they were zealots. And they had, like, additional mutations and powers and shit like that. So it's like, did they come from there? Or does that place mess them up just the same way it does for us? Or maybe it reverts them more to their true form. I don't
want to think of that. I don't think of them being something else. Also, yeah. There's just so many. I'm going to have nightmares. Guys, if you don't know already, I'm terrified of space creatures. I hate them. Hate them with all my heart. And mind flayers are the space creatures that are fucking just weaponized to do everything that I hate.
They're absolutely the worst. They're so bad. They spread so far. Because, all right, so remember, material plane, ethereal, elemental, astral. Now, that stuff that's right in the center, material plane, and the ethereal plane, I think the elemental planes are considered the inner planes. Everything further out from that, demi planes, heaven, hell, all of those are the outer planes. The Illithids, at some point in their history, spread so far just through expansion that they threatened the outer planes. They got to the outer planes, and the blood war between demons and devils was temporarily stalled and interrupted. Yes. Because a bunch of fucking Illithids showed up.
And they were just like, what? The blood war, a war that's been going on since damn near the dawn of time. Literally right after the dawn war, which is the war of creation, the blood war began. And then they were like, wait a second, I don't like you, you don't like me, but aliens. And but the aliens. the demons and the devils, the canonically, like, the demons and the devils are the most classically, like, make a deal, take your soul, evil, and I'll rip you apart and eat your kids' insides in front of you, which are the demons. They were like, time out, let's deal with them first.
We gotta deal with aliens. It was an I'm trying to think of like a campaign where you're somehow involved in an alien invasion of hell.
That's Faerun. That's just imagine you're playing out of the abyss, and you run into a few mind flayers. They capture you, and you're like, oh, we're going to Avernus. And you're like, excuse me? aren't you going to put a tadpole in my eye? Like, yeah, we'll do that. But first, we got to go to the first layer of hell where there's a war going on. And it's like, oh, it's pretty much Baldur's Gate 3, actually. It's pretty much exactly that. And it's like,
we're invading hell. You want to come?
And it's like,
no.
No, not really. But if I don't come, it's going to come back and bite me in my butt somehow. So,
yeah.
Let's go to hell. Let's go.
Let's go to hell. Yay. So I just that would be such a cool campaign, I think.
But that is actually so I'm not going to spoil too much of this for you guys, but the Mind Flayers were going to make a guest appearance in the campaign I'm making for us.
Oh.
It's going to be I would hate if I'm really good at playing them too. That'll make me even angrier because I'm like, dang, there's a connection between us there, but I'm never going to allow it to be.
I've had some evil characters that I've run in games, and there was one where we were grinding out this game almost every day, you know, like we were playing this thing because I had so much like material. And after a week of playing this character, we're like, okay, we're going to go, we got to get back to our lives. We got to work. We got to do other stuff. And I started having like terrible nightmares about doing the things that this evil piece of shit was responsible for. You know, like I felt unclean.
They're so insane, dude. They're so unbelievably, like it's the idea of like, imagine going into the brain of Victor Von Doom, but remove all of the humanity he has.
Yeah, it's just Doom with brain worms.
And it's just like, have fun.
Yeah.
Have fun with this. Go be as terrible as you want to be.
And like each colony has like their own culture and stuff, but overall, they are furthering a single species goal. And I don't think a lot of other races or monsters or anything in D&D have that sort of like singular focus. I don't think dragons are united, beholders are united, even the elves
who even
the
like humanoid races that exist in the world, like the humans are all off doing humans. The most united I would give it to maybe dwarves. Dwarves are the most united like race.
But and you even still get dwarves, like dwarves,
they have personalities.
House.
Yeah, like
yeah.
These guys, it's none of that. It's just straight up, this is for the greater advancement of our species, period. Yeah. It's not about me or you or it sounds like some really terrifyingly insane, like super communist stuff, but it's how they work.
Alien communists, yeah.
Sort of.
Like they don't even really have religion. Like some of the different colonies do. You have Ilsensine, which is supposed to be like the biggest possible deity that they get, but it's really just a deity of mental domination, which is their existing MO. And a lot of their deities are not, like, they don't necessarily worship them in the same way that we do. They're more like, oh, this is like a paragon, someone to emulate, someone to be more like, rather than we serve this thing. They have a minor one that's like Manzikorian, which is the embodiment of comprehension of all knowledge. So secrets included. And again, that's more of an embodiment of an idea than it is worship. The one that is the craziest is that one that they came back from the far realm and were just all about it. And that was Thun.
Thun is the mysterious entity of war, evil, and madness from the far realm. And it is bad, bad, bad news.
Thun is, like, just the name evokes a sense of dread, I think. Like, it has that sort of, like, when I was a kid, the whole world of Conan the Barbarian was kind of scary in a way. Like, it's fantasy, and it's sword and sorcery, but it was kind of scary. Everything about it was kind of scary. And Thun has that vibe, that feel.
Very, very much so.
That that it just, it comes from this place outside, and it has a will, and it's almost like it's an elder brain of its own. Because when these guys come back, they don't give a shit what the elder brain has to say. They don't care. So if they were, and I don't know, but it, I think because it was an expedition or a pilgrimage, I doubt that they took an elder brain with them. But imagine if they had.
I don't want to think of that. I don't want to think of that. I'm going to have nightmares. I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. I know it. I'm going to try to go to bed and I'm going to be like, I can't sleep. Too busy thinking about aliens eating me.
With their just little crunchy egg noises as they...
As they crack my skull and slurp my brain out the back.
It's fucking wild. Because it just takes a little bit of time of just like thinking about them, you know? And then they just have this like morphic way about them where they go through, you know, experiments with their own children, with their own offspring.
Yeah, they are.
And put them into creatures that they know very well. Ah, this thing is probably going to die because it probably won't work. But what if it did? And then they do it. It just, it's fine. Like, I can't imagine the kind of emptiness that exists within a soul, within a mind, to just be like, yo, I wonder what happens if I do this with my kid.
And
like,
they just don't. And it's just us. It's a race-wide thing. It is not something that one's going to, well, you might find a one or two that are separate, that are like, yeah, we're crazy. I'm hiding. Well, they have to hide. That's another thing. They have to hide. Because if they break off from the elder brain, they'll send others after them to destroy it, because that one is a liability, because it knows stuff about the whole entire society. So like, oh, we got to destroy you.
Yeah.
But don't worry.
Got to take them out.
The Githyanki are the heroes in situation, because they are the kings of slaughtering mind flayers.
Githyanki are pieces of shit too, though.
Suck. Like, they suck. Githyankis suck, but they're better than mind flayers. So
yeah, like it's like you're.
Githyankis are pirate assholes that like destroy. Like they are known for killing anything they encounter in the freaking Vastral Sea. But yeah. So what?
I mean, you kind of want that when it's coming to mind flayers. It's
wild. Exactly.
Now, one of the things about mind flayers is that once we started digging into the research of mind flayers, we realized like how intrinsically connected they are to so many other concepts within Dungeons and Dragons, not just in an individual campaign setting, like we said, but all of it. All of it. The cosmology, good and evil, where the worlds are situated, how the planes function, all of that stuff. And I would like to know, if you guys have gotten to this point, you know, listening to us go on and on, I want to know in the comments. I don't necessarily want to put out a poll with all the possible options, because then you're just going to split people's attention so many different ways. But I do want to see in the comments, if we talked about something in this episode that seemed like, oh man, I want to hear about that. You want to hear about the crystal spheres? Cool. You want to hear about Dark Sun? You want to hear about Dragonlance? You want to hear about the Phlogiston or any of that stuff that really could be an episode on its own? The Githyanki, the Gith, how they split into the Githyanki and the Githazari. These are all on the table. Mm-hmm. I just want to see it in the comments. Of things, and if someone suggests it, you know, upvote it, like it, whatever the mechanic is, and then that will give us kind of a direction of where we're going to go, because episodes like this one that are just tied into those things, it would really suck if we had to explain it again as part of a separate episode of someone else's spotlight. With Illithids, it makes sense because, like we said, their timeline extends across all of that stuff. Their tentacles, mm-hmm. as it were, reach Ew. Out and just kind of, you know, like the mind flare in Stranger Things. It's just this massive set of tentacles that wraps around everything.
Yeah, it's expansive.
Yeah. So they're a good race for discussing this stuff. But yes, as far as that stuff goes, like, everything we've mentioned can and should be an episode of its own. We just need to know which direction to go in with it.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So with that being said, I think we've said just about everything we can about the Elithids without going into circles on how disgusting and terrible they are.
Yeah, I think just about.
I can't think of anything else that we may have left out. If, again, that's what the comment section is for. Let us know. I'm sure that any other Elithid stuff could be its own episode. I know Sween would love to come back to the Elithids and just...
Yeah, dude. I'll come back to the Elithids. I would love to do it if they talk about how... I could talk about the Gith and how they meticulously make them not around anymore. I would love that.
The eradication of the Mind Flayers. Yeah.
It's one day we'll achieve it. One day.
Yeah, so... Do you have anything else that you want to add in closing?
In closing? No, not really. First and foremost, thank you guys for tuning in. We are just starting this out, but we're getting a lot of support that's making us very happy and it's giving us more motivation to continue to put these things up. So don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, share with a friend, and tune in to the next episode.
Yep, we can be found at the we can be found on Twitter. We have YouTube, we have Spotify. We're going to be doing some other stuff soon. We're all Legends and Lore. I think the Twitter is at Legends and Lore PC for podcast, but everything else I think it's Legends and Lore. So, check us out. Look at some of the you know, the old episodes that we've got. We want to be improving this every time we do an episode.
Yep, so, yep.
The next time we see you, hopefully we'll have something else for you that you find interesting, and we will see you then.
All right. Later, guys. Take care and stay safe.